Bill Cradle, 5.
Yes, so it was 25 miles wide. So we, in three parachutists from England, arrived, you know, over there. First arrived by the middle of August, and we in two arrived in the beginning of September. Of course, they were not everybody. I mean, they lost quite a lot of weapons, they lost quite a lot of uniforms, you know, in this battle. But they started again to organize themselves, and they were coming, you know, to it. And by the end of November, there was again about 400 of us, you know, in this forest. And then, and we, with the Russians, we had quite good relations. And on the 1st of, by the end of November, we had invitation for a conference, military conference, in a Russian headquarters, you know, in the forest. Because they had, at the time, they probably had about 10,000 people, partisans over there. And I was second in command. So the major, which commanded our unit, wanted, you know, straight away that, because they asked that every officer should be present on this. So the major said, oh yes, we have to all go over there. I said, no. If there will be decision to make on the spot, so you will make a decision, probably two or three officers with you will be sufficient. Not all the officers from this unit should go. Finally, he agreed, and I said, if you want to go as a commanding officer, all right, so I stay with the unit. If you want me to go over there, so then you have to stay with the unit. I think this is the quite clear and good proposals. And he agreed, he said, I will go, and you will stay with the unit. And in the morning on the 1st December, I made a sort of a report, you know, for him that six officers and about 11 people of escort are ready to march, and they went off. It's a funny thing, you know, that when he went about 50 yards, then he came because they were all going by on horseback. He came back, you know. And I was still standing. It was dark because there was no light there. He said for me, oh, my dear, took the watch from his hand, keep it for me, please. And what? You need the watch over there. No. You give me back the watch when I come back. Who? Don't be silly. Take the watch with you. No. Keep it. So I took it, you know, there, and we went over there.
So it made you suspicious about what was going to happen?
Probably he felt something, you know, that something may happen, you know. And, of course, in the morning, 6 o'clock, everybody was still asleep, you know, in the camp. There were not many people because most people were outside the camp because in the camp there was no food. It was very difficult to get the food, you know, to the camp because it was about 25 kilometers from the nearest village. So there was about 100-150 people maybe in the camp. And I went to the hut of our quartermaster. I said, oh, fine. I've got very nice coffee, he said. That's the barley coffee, because we didn't build it just the barley coffee. And so we can have a coffee in the morning. All right, we had this coffee, and duty officer came, you know, before even we started, he said that about 5 Russians came to the camp and want to speak to somebody from our headquarters. And I said to him, look, tell them that no one is here. Our officers went to the conference, and so on. So he went, but in a few minutes he was back. He said, they want to speak to somebody from the headquarters. So I went, you know, from this, you know, hut, quartermaster hut, and went. And there was a snow, about 2 inches snow, frozen. So when you walked, so I went and look at these Russians, where they are. And, you know, from that side, when half an hour earlier, you know, our delegation went, somebody is coming. What the hell is going on here? I stood, you know, behind a small bush, fir bush, and look, and in the first, there were 3 people. One of them in the middle was one of the officers who was organizing, you know, this unit at the very beginning. And from one side, there was a chief of staff of the Bolshevik partisans unit. And on the other side was the other, I didn't know him, both with the machine guns. And my friend in the middle didn't have even belt, so he was disarmed completely. And then they start, look, the major, the Russian major, told him, look, now you have to call all your people to come around here. And he said, you took my pistol, you took my belt, I am disarmed. I have no right to call anybody. You can call, but I am not calling this. So then, in that time, from our hut, sort of where we had an office, came the chap, the who was actually doing, you know, the sort of paperwork, and he said, John. And one of the small unit was a bit farther over there. Go to lieutenant who is stationed over there and tell him that our delegation was disarmed and Russians are in the camp, in our camp. And he said, yes, sir, and started to run, you know, in this direction. And I said, what actually should I do here? There is not much to do for me. So I ran after him, you know, to the other place. But it was only about 40, 50 people over there, so there was not much hope. So when I arrived over there, I made an alarm, you know, call, and there were a couple of officers there. So I said, look, this happened. The Russians are in our camp. The delegation was disarmed, and now the question is what to do. As I see, there are 2 possibilities. simply got round and escape, you know, from the whole thing, or we can go to the camp and try to help, you know, them which are in the camp. Of course, no one wanted to escape, you know, from that. No, we have to help them. All right, if we want to help them, so all right, so we go. I am going with the small group here, and you are going on the small group that...
In the opposite direction.
Opposite direction, and we meet at the camp. When I went to the camp, I mean, so then there was shot from the other side. I don't know who shot it over there. And this same major, Russian major, started, look, if there was one shot, I'll open fire to all your people. And you know, all this in the camp was already in a row, and in front there were Russians, you know, with the machine guns, you know, and the heavy machine guns on the flanks and so on. So what to do? So there's not much to do. So I went simply, you know, again, and there were two or three officers already disarmed, you know, in the headquarters hut, near the headquarters hut. So I went there. And then another shot, you know, from the other side was fired. So then the Russian major said, who will voluntarily go to those fascists over there and persuade them there is no use to fight here and to sort of destroy the blood proposed them to surrender. And two of the people said, all right, I can go. And the second said, well, I can go, all right. So one of them took a bit of wood and put the dirty handkerchiefs on this as a sort of parliamentary sign, and you know, they walk behind me, and I didn't simply think about this, but I just look, you know, how disorganized everything was in this camp. I went between them. He said, I'm going with you. So then we in three went out. But I still had a gun here. And on the outskirts of our camp, there was a sort of a Mongol sentry. And he said, where are you going? And the one said, don't you see that we are a parliamentary delegation, you know, to those people over there to surrender? We are sent by Major Vasilevich. Said, all right. And he asked, why do you have the weapon still? You shouldn't have the weapon here. And the other said, straight away, yeah, they are fascists over there. You can't go without weapon to them. We have to have a weapon. So he was convinced and let us, you know, through. So we went to the small group and with the small group, there are about 20 of them. And in the meantime, we met one of their fellow, very severely wounded, you know, between the woods. So one of our, parliamentary delegation was left with him, to help him, but he later died. And with we went and found, you know, the other group, which was about 21 or 22 people over there. And I said, no, this is what's happened, and as described how, I said, now it is the only way is to find a proper way to go out of this pocket, because otherwise you will be destroyed here. And we started to go through the marshes. And there was ice, and about 1 inch, or a bit more, and about 2 miles of the marshes. It took us from about 8 o'clock in the morning and until the 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon. That was a terrible march. In one place, because I said, I will go first, I had a piece of wood, you know, stick, and it seems to me, when you start, you know, to put your feet, you know, on the ice, you had always the feeling that it will hold. But when you, the other foot put out, it broke. And you know, again, you know, they said the same, all the time. And in one place, again, you know, when there was some sort of stream, invisible stream, and when I went there, so again, you know, I fell to the water up to about this, you know.
Your waist.
Yes, the waist. That was terrible. And finally we went. We succeeded, and one chap was wounded, so this was a terrible thing to carry him because he couldn't go. He was wounded by a Russian bullet, you know, somewhere to...
In the leg?
Here. Yes, in the leg. And we went through this, and now we found first people, Polish people from the burnt villages, you know, in the summer. So they were squattering, you know, in the forest, you know, having sort of temporary huts, which they built themselves, you know. They were very sympathetic and gave us some food. They didn't have much, just, some potatoes, one or two potatoes for each of us. And then we went further. And what we learned, you know, that our one company, which was stationed not far from the camp, in the first village, actually, was again attacked and disarmed completely. Few people didn't want to give up their, you know, weapons, so they were shot, and that's that. You know, this was very difficult to understand this. Why this happened, how this happened, and so on and so on. Only after the war, one of the communist historians went, you know, to the archives in Vilna and Minsk and found the order of the highest command in Moscow that all the Polish unit had to be destroyed. You know, there was the order of 22nd of June 1943. Why they didn't do it at once with our unit? Probably they were hoping, you know, that the Germans will destroy us and they will not be forced, you know, to do it by themselves. But again, in August, they destroyed one of the unit about 150 kilometers from us when they invited the same way For the conference, commanding officer plus his staff, and simply they disappeared. Later, you know, somebody told that he was hanged, you know, by the leg on the tree, and of course killed, you know, that way. But it was in September, and our term came, you know, in December. You know, that's. So then there was the question, what to do? There was only about 50 of us left, because some of them have the sort of the few days off, you know, to allow some family matters to settle, and so on and so on. So there was about 50 of us left. You know, we found, you know, all this after about 3 or 4 days, and of course I sat and give a report, you know, to our headquarters in Lida. And ask, what should we do now? Because, you know, there were, you know, about 50 people, you can't hide, you know, completely. So they were trying, you know, to destroy us, because there was the command from the top.
Who was trying to destroy you?
Russians. The Russians. So then we jumped a bit farther, where never been before in Rakov, and there was a sort of a police unit in Rakov, about 100 people strong. But what happened, that this police unit, Russian, white Russian police unit, which was actually on the orders of German, because they were helping Germans, you know, to do the routine work over there, the routine duties. They were all Poles, you know, and commanding of the unit was, before the war, was a staff sergeant in one of the artillery regiment, you know, Polish artillery regiment. So we knew about that, and we went there and, look, you have to help us somehow. What can I do for you? We need some ammunition. We don't have much, because Russian took all this ammunition which we had. So he gave us some ammunition. And then what to do? We have to stop all the activities against German. Because you can fight on the front if you don't have supply. So we stopped the activity against the German. But the Russians still wanted to destroy us. So we had to patrol our unit from various directions. At this time, the unit was built as a mostly cavalry unit, because then we could move quicker from one place to the other. And somehow, you know, from the headquarters, we have to wait nearly 2 months, you know, to give some instructions, but the instruction was absolutely know what to do. They couldn't help us much. And we were still defending ourselves because of this communist enemies, you know. That was the all hour. And but the unit was growing. I don't know why. You know, the people were still, you know, coming to our unit. So then, in June, when the Russians' offensive came, you know, to our doorstep, so there were nearly 800 of us, you know, there. And we got and there was funny thing, because when on the 17th of June there was a conference in the headquarters at Lida, and I was asked to come over there or send my deputy there. So I sent the deputy over there, and I said, look, you go, on the 17th is the conference, and find out what is all about. So then they, there was a very nice conference, and then there was our unit was to come to take over the city of Vilna before the Russians will come, you know, the Russian offensive will come. So he said, all right, that's fine, but we can't go on our own, because there are Russians and Germans on our way. We can't march like that, and this is about over 100 miles, you know, to Vilna from our place. So this commanding officer major, again, he was a parachutist from here. He said, all right, I will come to help you to come from that pocket. And everything was organized very nicely on the 10th of July. But when he started to go on the 29th of June to our rescue and to help us to come, you know, to Vilna, he only made about 20 or 30 kilometers and then was defeated, you know, by the Germans and Russians on the way to our place. So it was on the 29th of June. Then, 29th of June, in our place, we heard, you know, the front coming to us. But we didn't know, because we didn't have radio station all the time. So we were waiting for somebody to come and to tell us what to do. Because there was nothing else to do, so I said, all right, so I've go according to previous instruction that we have to move to the west. And we started on the 29th of June to go to the west. And we went between the Russian and the German front.
Heading for Warsaw.
And we reached Warsaw. This is about 400 kilometers. It took us 4 weeks, you know, to cover this. But it was not only that, this 800, you know, people with the weapon, but it was again about 500 people, evacuees, who didn't wanted, you know, to be there when the Russian comes. So there was at least 150 horse carts coming with us. We have to feed them, because how